East Lynne by Mrs. Henry Wood. Adapted for radio in 7 parts by Michael Baker. With Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Henry Wood, Moya Leslie as the Lady Isabel, David Collins as Mr. Carlyle, Anthony Adridge as Francis Leveson, Maxine Audley as Miss Cornelia, and Julie Barry as Barbara Hare. East Lynne, Part 1, The Broken Cross.
In an easy chair of the spacious and handsome library of his London house sat William, Earl of Mount Severn. His hair was grey. The smoothness of his expansive brow was defaced by premature wrinkles, and his once attractive face bore the pale, unmistakable look of dissipation. One of his feet was cased in folds of linen as it rested on a soft velvet ottoman, speaking of gout as plainly as any foot ever spoke yet. It would seem, to look at the man as he sat there, that he had grown old before his time.
My lord, a gentleman is asking to see you.
Yes? Who is it?
His card is here, my lord.
It is Mr. Carlyle of West Lynne.
Mr. Carlyle of West Lynne? What does he want? Show him up.
Yes, my lord.
Oh, I'm dying by inches. Inch by inch, from the foot upwards.
Mr. Carlyle, my lord.
Mr. Carlyle, I'm happy to see you. You perceive I cannot rise, at least not without great pain and inconvenience. My enemy, the gout, has taken possession of me again. take a seat. Are you staying in town?
I've just arrived from West Lynne. The chief object of my journey was to see your lordship.
I see. What can I do for you, Mr. Carlyle?
A rumor has reached my ears, my lord, that East Lynne is on the market.
A moment, sir. Are we to converse confidentially together as men of honor, or is there something concealed behind your question?
I do not understand you.
In a word, excuse me speaking plainly, but I must feel my ground. Are you here on the part of some of my rascally creditors to pump information out of me?
Lord, surely you can scarcely suspect that I should be guilty of an underhand trick in my life.
Oh.
I heard that East Lynne was privately for sale. Your agent dropped half a word to me in confidence. If so, I should wish to be the purchaser.
For whom?
For myself.
You? Get! Lawyering can't be such bad work, Carlyle.
Nor is it with an extensive first-class connection such as ours, but I was left a good fortune by my uncle and a large one by my father.
Mr. Carlyle, my affairs are in a very bad state, and ready money I must find somewhere. By selling East Lynne, a few thousands will come into my hands after claims on it are settled. I have no other means of raising the wind, and that is why I've resolved to part with it. But now, understand. If it were known abroad that East Lynne is going from me, I should have a hornet's nest about my ears. So that it must be disposed of, as you have just remarked, privately. Do you comprehend?
Perfectly.
I would assume you bought it as anyone else, if we can agree about terms.
What does your lordship expect for it, at a rough estimate?
Oh, for particulars, I must refer you to my men of business, Warburton and Ware. Not less than £70,000.
Oh. That's too much, my lord.
And that's not its value.
These forced sales never do fetch their value. I had thought until this hint was given me by Beecham that East Lynne was settled on your lordship's daughter.
There's nothing settled on Isabel. That comes of your thoughtless runaway marriages. I fell in love with General Conway's daughter, and she ran away with me like a fool. That is, we were fools together for our pains. I took her to Gretna Green, and she became Countess of Mount Severn without a settlement.
Oh.
It was an unfortunate affair, taking one thing with another. When her elopement was made known to the general, it killed him.
Killed him?
He had a disease of the heart, and the excitement brought on the crisis. And my poor wife was never happy from that hour. She blamed herself for her father's death, and I believe it led to her own. She was ill for years. The doctors called it consumption. It was more like a wasting insensibly away. And consumption had never been in her family. No luck ever attends runaway managers.
No.
You see, when I first found myself Earl of Mountstaben, I had never expected to succeed to the title. I thought I should never know how to spend so much money. But spend it I did. We never thought of making provision for our future children. Or, if we thought of it, we did not do it. There's an old saying, Mr. Carlyle, that what may be done at any time is never done at all. So, the child is portionless.
She was a very lovely girl. I remember that. Lovely.
You have seen her in her mother's lifetime. But to return to business. If you become the purchaser of the estate, Mr. Carlyle, it must be under the rose. In the eyes of the world, the proprietor of East Lynne must still be Earl Mountstaben, at least for some little time afterwards. Perhaps you will not object to that?
It is a curious way of doing business, but I will confer with Warburton and Ware in the morning. I'm sure we can come to some understanding.
I'm sure we can. Now, will you stay and dine with me?
Oh, gladly, but my clothes...
Oh, that's nothing, nothing. We should be quite alone, except for my daughter. Mrs. Vane of Castle Marling is staying with us. She came up to present my child at the last drawing room, but I know she is dining out, so we shall be quite alone, except for my daughter, the Lady Isabel.
Mr. Carlyle had not deemed himself an especial admirer of woman's beauty, but the extraordinary loveliness of the girl opposite him at the dining table took away his senses and self-possession. She seemed to the lawyer to be a vision from a fairer world than this. When dinner was over, she came to bid her father farewell.
You're dressed, Isabel.
Yes, papa. I'm calling on Emma Vane's mother, old Mrs. Everson, and I do not want to keep her waiting tea. She likes to take it early, and I know Mrs. Vane must have kept her waiting dinner. It was past 6 when she left here.
I hope you will not be late tonight, Isabel.
It depends upon Mrs. Vane. We are going to the Duchess of Dartford.
Yeah, then I'm sure you will be late. When young ladies in this fashionable world of ours turn night into day, it is a bad thing for their roses.
Goodbye, Papa. Mr. Carlyle.
Ma'am.
Good night, my love. Tell Mrs. Vane I will not have you kept out until morning hours. You're only a child yet.
I will do my best, Papa. But you know Mrs. Vane.
Well, is she not a handsome girl?
Handsome? It's not the word for beauty such as hers. I never saw a face half so beautiful.
She caused quite a sensation at the drawing room last week, as I hear. This everlasting gut kept me indoors all day. And she is as good as she is beautiful.
Do not cavil at her being thus praised. Admire and love her whilst you may. She is worthy of it now, in her innocent girlhood. The time will come when such praise would be misplaced. Could the fate that was to overtake his child have been foreseen by the Earl, he would have struck her down to death in his love, rather than suffer her to enter upon it.
Dear Mrs. Everson, I see I am late. But a gentleman dined with Papa today.
You are 25 minutes behind your time, and I want my tea. Emma, order it in.
Very well, Grandmama.
Not that you're alone in your unpunctuality. Emma kept me waiting for nearly 3/4 of an hour.
Oh, I am sorry, Mrs. Leveson.
Won't you take off that tippet, child?
Oh, thank you. The tea, Mum.
Well, set it down. Thank you.
Mum. The tea is not made, Grandmama. You surely do not intend to have it made in the room.
But where should I have it made?
It is much more convenient to have it brought in ready made. I dislike the on the brach of making.
Indeed. And get it slopped over in the saucers and as cold as milk. You always were lazy, Emma. And always given to those French words. Ambarra, indeed. Oh. There's the tea caddy at your elbow.
I don't know how much to put in.
You mean you don't want to dirty your gloves?
Shall I make it, dear Mrs. Leveson? I used to make it at Mount Severn, and I make it for Papa.
Oh, do, child. You're worth 10 of her.
What a cosy domestic scene.
Francis!
Forgive me. I did not realize you had company.
My grandson, Captain Leveson. Lady Isabel Vane.
Lady Isabel. Enchanted, I'm sure.
How do you do, Captain Leveson?
Isabel, a child yet in the ways of the world, blushed crimson at the admiring looks cast upon her by the young guardsman. Strange that she should make the acquaintance of those two men in the same day, almost in the same hour. The two of all the human race who were to exercise so powerful an influence over her future life.
We were about to take tea, Captain. Can I...
How could I resist a cup from such fair hands?
That's a very pretty cross you're wearing, child.
Is it not pretty? It was given me by my dear mamma just before she died. Stay, I will take it off for you. Here.
Why? I declare you have nothing on but that cross and some rubbishing pearl bracelets. I did not look at you before. Why did you not put on your diamonds?
I did not like to be too fine. They glittered so.
Oh, I see you mean to set up amongst that class of people who pretend to despise ornaments.
Lady Isabel needs no ornaments to set off her beauty, cousin.
Here, child, take your cross. It's very pretty. Prettier on your neck than diamonds would be.
Permit me, Lady Isabel. Oh.
You put your foot on it.
Broken.
Lady Isabel, how can I possibly apologize?
Why? You are crying over your stupid bauble of a cross.
You can have it mended, dear. Pray, do not blame yourself, Captain. The fault was as much mine as yours, and as Mrs. Leveson says, it can be mended.
If you had done such an awkward thing for me, Francis Leveson, my doors would have been closed against you for a month. There. If you're going to go to the Duchess of Dartford, you'd better go. Dancing off to begin an evening at 10 o'clock at night. My time, we used to go at 7.
When George the Third dined at 1 o'clock upon boiled mutton and turnips.
Good night, then, cousin.
I shall not say good night. You will find me there almost as soon as you.
You told me you were not coming. Some bachelor's party in the way.
Yes, but I have changed my mind. Lady Isabel, let me hand you downstairs to your carriage.
I declare, Isabel, you put the chain back round your neck. You can't go with that thin string of gold on and nothing else.
Why not? If people say anything, I can tell them there's an accident happened, of course. Oh, I'm sure it must be an evil omen.
An evil what?
An evil omen. Mama gave me that cross when she was dying. She told me to let it be to me as a talisman, always to keep it safely. And when I was in any distress or in need of counsel, to look at it and strive to recall what her advice would be and to act accordingly. Now, it is broken. Broken.
Andrew, my dear fellow.
Charles.
I thought you'd given up coming to these scenes of enchantment.
I had, but I'm on the lookout, so I'm forced into them again. I think the ballroom, the greatest bore in life.
On the lookout for what?
For a wife, Charles.
Take the new beauty, then.
The girl who caused such a stir at the drawing room.
Mm.
Who is she?
Lady Isabel Vane. The girl's beauty is beyond common. I saw that great Leveson making up to her. He fancies he can carry all before him where women are concerned.
I hate that fellow. Thinks so much of himself with his curled hair and his shining teeth and his white hands. He's as heartless as an owl. What was that hushed-up business about Miss Charters?
Who's to know? Leveson slipped out of the escapade like an eel, and the women protested that he was more sinned against than sinner. 3/4 of the world believed them.
There he is now. Look over there.
And Mount Severn's daughter with him.
I just cannot put the breaking of your precious cross out of my mind, Lady Isabel. I feel that it can never be atoned for.
that the heartfelt homage of my whole life would not be sufficient compensation.
Come, Captain. I had almost forgotten it. You must forget it, too.
You are too generous. May I presume further on your generosity? Will you allow me the pleasure of the next waltz? It would prove that I really am forgiven.
West Lynn is a town of some importance, particularly in its own eyes. Though being neither a manufacturing town nor a cathedral town nor even the chief town of the county, it is somewhat primitive in its manner and customs. About a mile outside the town, halfway towards the beautiful estate called East Lynn, is the residence of one of the justices. The Grove, the property of Mr. Justice Hare.
I'm so cold tonight, Barbara. I wonder if your papa would say it was foolish of me if I told the servants to light a fire.
Have it lighted if you like. I'll ring for Jasper.
Papa has gone out with Squire Pinner to smoke a pipe or two over at Beecham. He won't be home till after bedtime, so he'll know nothing about it one way or another.
Why are you putting on your shawl?
I feel restless, Mama. I'm going out for a stroll.
But it's dark, Barbara.
It's nearly a full moon, Mama.
It's so chilly.
I'll be warm enough.
Oh,
and don't worry, you'll have your fire.
But
I shan't be long. When will he come home? Life is so miserable when he's not here. Cornelius said he would only be gone for a day, and it's now 3 days. Surely that is his footstep. It is. I know it. Archibald?
Barbara? Oh. What are you doing out in the moonlight? How are you?
When did you return?
Only now, by the 8 o'clock train, which came in beyond its time. I've not been home yet.
No? Well, your sister will have something to say about that.
Well, Cornelia must wait for once.
Then come in and talk to Mama.
Thank you. Take my arm. And how have you been, Barbara, these few days?
Oh, very well. What made you start off the town so suddenly?
Well, you just expressed it, Barbara. Suddenly. A matter of business suddenly arose, and I suddenly went up upon it.
Your sister Cornelia said you were gone only for a day.
Oh, did she? Oh, when in London, I find many things to do. Is Mrs. Hare better?
Just the same. I think half of Mama's ailments are fancies. If she would only rouse herself, she would be better. What's in that parcel?
Now, you are not to inquire, Miss Barbara. It does not concern you. It concerns only Mrs. Hare.
Oh, is it something you've brought for Mama, Archibald?
Well, of course. I've brought something for you also.
Oh, what is it?
Now there's an impatient girl. What is it? Now, wait a moment and you shall see what it is. Now, where can it be? Oh, I must have lost it somehow. No, here it is.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Let's go in and see your mother.
Oh, but what can it be?
Now, don't you laugh at me, Mrs. Lair. It's not a roll of velvet for a dress, nor a roll of parchment, I'm afraid, conferring £20,000 a year on me. There.
Look, Mama.
It's an air cushion.
Oh! How am I to thank you?
What? Well, if you thank me at all, I will never bring you anything else. I've heard you wish often for the comfort of an air cushion.
Yes.
Happening to see some displayed in a window in the Strand, it occurred to me to bring you one.
How thin it is.
Thin?
Of course, Mama.
It has to be filled with air, Mrs. Hare.
Oh.
Like this. There. You see, it's not so thin now.
Oh, it was truly kind of you to think of me, Archibald.
A visit to London entails gifts for a friend. And you see how smart I've made Barbara.
What a beautiful locket. Archibald, you're too good, too generous.
Oh, no. I thought it might hold that piece of hair you prized, Barbara.
Archibald, what piece?
Richard's. Barbara showed it to me one day when she was turning out her desk.
Oh,
My happy boy. Mr. Hare wonders at my ill health, Archibald. Barbara ridicules him.
No.
But there lies the source of all my misery, mental and bodily.
Oh, Richard. Well, I shall wish you both good evening and go to Cornelia. If she knows I've been back all this while, I shall be lectured.
Goodbye, Archibald. You're so thoughtful.
No.
I'll see you to the gate.
Thank you.
You catch cold, Barbara.
I'll take my shawl, Mama.
I think your Mama looks unusually ill.
Oh, you know how she suffered the little thing to upset her.
Yes.
And last night she had what she calls one of her dreams. She says it is a warning that something bad is going to happen. Papa has been quite angry about her being so weak and nervous. Of course, we dare not tell him about the dream.
Is it related to the...
Yes, to the murder. You know Mama has always declared that Bethel had something to do with it. She says her dreams would have convinced her of it if nothing else did. And she dreamt she saw him with... You know.
Hallijohn?
With Hallijohn. He appeared to be standing over him as he lay on the floor. And that wretched Affy was standing at the end of the kitchen looking on.
But Mrs. Hare ought not to suffer dreams to disturb her peace by day. Your mother's trouble is great, Barbara. And she's not strong.
I think all our troubles have been great since that dark evening. Oh, Archibald.
What is it?
I have not said a word of thanks to you for the locket. Do not deem me ungrateful.
Oh, you foolish girl. It's not worth thanks. There. Now I'm paid. Good night, Barbara.
Good night. Good night. Who invited you? What do you want?
Barbara. Don't you recognize me?
Richard!
Did you not know me?
In that beard? In labourer's clothes? But how could you take the chance of coming here? If you are discovered, it is certain death. Death
upon the gallows. I do know it, Barbara.
Then why risk it? Should Mama see you, it will kill her outright.
I can't live on as I am living now. I have been working in London ever since.
In London?
In London. And I have never stirred out of it. Oh, but it is hard work for me. And now I have the opportunity of doing better, if I can obtain a little money. Oh, perhaps my mother can let me have it. It is this that I have come to ask for.
How are you working? What at?
In a stable yard.
Stable yard? Oh, poor Richard. Oh, what a miserable night's work that was. Our only comfort has been that you must have committed the deed in madness.
I did not commit it at all.
What?
Barbara. I swear that I am innocent. I swear that I was not present when the man was murdered. I know no more who did it than you do. But I can guess, and I know that my guess is as sure and truer one as the moon in the heavens above us. The man who did the deed was Thorne.
Thorne? Who is Thorne?
I don't know. I wish I did. I wish I could unearth him. He was a friend of Affy's.
Oh, Richard, you forget yourself in the creature's name to me.
Well, it was not to discuss these things that I have put myself in jeopardy. Is my father as bitter against me as ever?
Oh, he never mentions your name or suffers it to be mentioned. After the delivery of the verdict, he took an oath in the justice room, in the presence of his brother magistrates, that if he could find you, he would deliver you up to justice, and that he would do so, though you might not turn up for 10 years to come.
Oh.
You know his disposition, Richard, and therefore may be sure that he will keep his oath.
I know his disposition. Had my home been made happier, I should not have sought the society that I did.
Oh.
Barbara, I must be allowed an interview with my mother.
I do not see how it could be possible.
Well, why can't she come to see me out here?
It is impossible to think of it tonight.
What about the money? It is £100 that I want.
You must be here again tomorrow night, Richard. But if it is, as you say, that you are innocent, could it not be proved?
Who is to prove it?
Why not tell the whole circumstances to Archibald Carlyle?
What?
If anyone can help you or take means to establish your innocence, he can. And you know that he is true as steel.
As no other man living should be trusted with the secret that I am here, except Carlyle. Oh, hush, somebody's coming.
Papa, he's come home earlier than I expected. He's going into the house. I must go, Richard. I dare not stay another minute. Be here again tomorrow night, and meanwhile, I will see what can be done. Go now.
About to lock up. What brings you out at this time of the night?
I went out to the gate to look for you. Did you not see me?
It's time you were in bed, young lady.
Miss Hare to see you, Mr. Carlyle.
Barbara!
You must regard me as a client and pardon the intrusion.
But please, take a seat.
No. I have a strange thing to tell you, but is it possible that anyone can hear us? It could be, it might be, death.
There is no danger.
Archibald, Richard is here.
Richard? At Westley?
He came last night. He has been in London all this time, half starving, working. Oh, I feel ashamed to mention it to you, in a stable yard. And, oh, Archibald, he says he is innocent.
Sit down, Barbara, and tell me what has happened as calmly as you can.
And will you see him? Will you come this evening, Archibald?
It is hazardous. For him, I mean. Still, if he is to be at the Grove tonight, I may as well be there, too.
Oh, I knew you would not desert us. But how are we to secure Papa's absence from home tonight? It must be accomplished in some way. You know his temper. Mm. Were I or Mama to suggest him to go and see any friend or go to the club, he would immediately stop at home. Can you devise any plan?
I think I may be able to manage something.
Then I must go.
Now, I will send to the bank for money for Richard. Till tonight.
Goodbye.
Miss Hare! What on earth? Have you been with Archibald?
I came here on a private errand for Mama, Miss Cornelia. She is not well.
I never heard of such a thing. Your mamma sent you on business. Twice have I been in to see Archibald, and twice did old Dill answer that he was engaged. I shall demand an explanation. Good day, Miss Hare.
Good day, Miss Cornelia.
And Dill?
Archibald, what is going on?
Cornelia. Dill. Tell them all to be at my house at 6 o'clock.
I'll see that they get your message, Mr. Carlyle.
Thank you. Now, what is it, Cornelia? I am very busy.
What's up at the Hares that Barbara should come here and be closeted with you? Business for her mother, she said.
Why, you know the mess that Hare and the other justices have got into.
No.
Committing that poor fellow Hardick to prison. Because he was seen to pull up a weed in his garden on Sunday.
Huh?
Mrs. Hare is very naturally anxious, for my opinion, for there may be some trouble over it.
Mm.
Well, the man has appealed to the Home Secretary. And I've invited a party for tonight.
A party?
4 or 5 of the justices, including Mr. Hare, are coming over to discuss the matter over a pipe or two of tobacco.
They shan't come. Do you think I'll be poisoned with tobacco smoke in my own house?
Cornelia, my having them is a matter of business. Of business, you understand. Oh. And come they must. Now, I really must beg you to leave me.
When I have come to the bottom of this affair with Barbara Hare. Oh, you are very clever, Archie, but you can't deceive me. She didn't come here because of the scrape the bench have got into. I tell you, Archibald, I'll hear what it is. I should like to know what you and Barbara do with a secret between you.
Oh, very well. I will tell you if you wish, Cornelia, but it is not a pleasant thing to hear. Richard Hare has returned.
Carlyle, I'm over here. Richard.
Is my mother coming out to see me?
No. You ought to go indoors. Your father is up at my house with the other justices. I contrived to have myself called away on urgent business, especially today.
Your sister says you wish to disclose to me the true history of that lamentable night. You better speak while we're here.
Well, if I must, I must.
It was all on account of that girl. I did love her. I would have waited until I was my own master to make her my wife.
Your wife?
Afi Hallijohn. Why, you mustn't suppose that I meant anything else with her. I wouldn't have been such a blackguard.
Did she return your love?
Oh, I can't be certain. Sometimes I thought she did, but she was forever telling me I must not come this or that evening. Those were the evenings she was with him.
With him?
With Thorne.
Who's Thorne? I've never heard of him.
Neither did anyone else, I expect, in West Lynn. Oh, he took precious good care of that. He lived some miles away and used to come courting her in secret when her father was not at home.
Now, come to the point, Richard. To that evening.
Hallijohn's gun was out of order. He knew I was courting Affy, and he requested the loan of mine. I had arranged to see Affy that evening, and I went down to their house after dinner, carrying the gun with me. Mm-hmm. When I reached Hallijohn's, Affy came out all reserve and said she was unable to receive me then, and I must go back home. As we were talking, Locksley passed by and saw me with a gun in my hand. I gave way to Affy and left the gun with her, telling her it was loaded. I did not go away, but hid myself in the trees, for I had a suspicion she had Thorne there. Again, Locksley came into view, saw me there, and called out to know why I was hiding.
What did you tell him?
I made no answer. Why should I? What were my private movements to him? And that told against me at the inquest.
What happened there?
Not long afterwards, 20 minutes perhaps, I heard a shot from the direction of the cottage. I thought it must be a poacher, but it was the shot that killed Hallijohn. At that moment, I saw Bethel emerge from the trees and run in the direction of the cottage. Very soon, someone came panting and tearing along the path from the cottage. It was Thorne. I have never seen a man show more utter terror. His face was livid, his eyes seemed starting, and his lips were drawn back from his teeth.
What did you do?
Well, I thought something might have happened to Affy, so I ran to the cottage, and I fell over the body of Hallijohn. He was lying just within on the kitchen floor, dead. Blood was round him, and my gun, just discharged, was thrown near him. I called to Affy. No one answered. A sort of a panic came over me. I caught up the gun and I was flying from the door when Locksley emerged from the wood. And what possessed me, I can't tell, but I did the worst thing I could do. I flung the gun indoors again and got away, although Locksley called after me to stop.
Nothing at the inquest told against you so much as that.
Aye, and all owing to my accursed cowardice. But let me go on. I came upon Bethel standing in a half circle of trees. Now, I knew that if Bethel had gone up to the cottage, I knew he must have seen Thorne rushing away from it. Did you encounter that hound? I said. What hound? That fine fellow Thorne, I said, who comes after Affy. He said he knew no one called Thorne and had encountered no one on the path. So I left him and came away.
But who is this Thorne? He was in the habit of coming to West Lynn evening after evening. How was it he was never observed?
Thorne chose byroads, and he never came except by dusk or dark. There was no cause for anyone to know him.
And what manner of man was he?
Well, in age, he might have been 23 or 24. Tall and slender. Out-and-out aristocrat with his perfumed hands and his rings and his dainty gloves. Oh, he displayed a profusion of jewelry. He would wear diamond shirt studs, diamond rings, diamond pins, all of the first water. My impression was that he put them on to dazzle Affy.
And where is Affy now?
Well, how should I know? I was just going to ask you.
She disappeared immediately after the funeral. It was thought the neighborhood gave her credit for having gone off and joined you.
I have never seen or heard of her, Carlyle, since that fatal night. If she went after anyone, it was after Thorne.
Very well. You must go in now and see your mother, Richard. I'll go to my house and make certain that your father does not leave for the next hour or so. I'll see you to that. Your mother is waiting.
The church bells of West Lynn rang out one lovely morning in July to proclaim it was Sunday, a very special Sunday, for Lord Mount Severn and his daughter were to grace morning service with their presence. East Lynn had changed hands and was now the property of Mr. Carlyle, but the transfer had been conducted in secrecy and was suspected by none.
Whether Lord Mountseven thought it might prevent anyone from getting scent of the matter, or whether he wished to take farewell of a place he had formerly been fond of, certain it is that he desired to visit it for a day or two. Mr. Carlyle most readily and graciously acquiesced, and the Earl, his daughter, and their retinue had arrived the previous day.
What a spectacle! I think the world's gone mad. I've never seen such silks and feathers.
And here comes Barbara. No wonder the justice took exception to her display of finery.
The vain little idiot. Good morning, Miss Cornelia.
Well done, Barbara. You're finer than a sunbeam.
Not half so fine as many another in church will be today. West Lynne seems bent on outdressing the Lady Isabel. You should have been at the milliner's yesterday morning, Miss Carlyle.
Is all West Lynne turning out in such style?
Of course, to see the Earl and his daughter come to the church.
Suppose the Lady Isabel should not be in peacock's plumes.
Oh, but she is sure to be.
Or suppose they should not come to church. What a disappointment to the bonnets and feathers.
After all, Barbara, what are they to us or we to them? We may never meet. We insignificant West Lynne gentry should not intrude ourselves upon East Lynne. It would scarcely be fitting to do so.
That's just what Papa said. He caught sight of this bonnet yesterday, and when, by way of excuse, I said I had it to call on them, he asked whether I thought the obscure West Lynne families would venture to thrust their calls on Lord Mountseven as though they were of the county aristocracy. It was the feather put him out.
It's certainly a very long one.
Come, I'd better go in. You'd best sit in our pew, Barbara.
What do you mean? The grey old man with the limp and the young lady in the muslin dress with the straw bonnet. Have you seen them before?
That is the Earl and Lady Isabel.
But she's so dowdy. No silks, no feathers, no anything. She's more plainly dressed than anyone in church.
Plainer than any of the fine ones. The Earl is much altered. But I should have known them both anywhere. I should have known her from her likeness to her poor mother. Just the same eyes and sweet expression.
She is very lovely. What fine jackdaws she must think us all.
Isabel, that's Mr. Carlyle, surely. Mr. Carlyle! Mr. Carlyle!
Lord Mountseven! Lady Isabel.
Mr. Carlyle.
I have many things to say to you, Mr. Carlyle. I wish you would come home with us. If you have nothing better to do, be East Lynne's guest for the remainder of the day.
I should be delighted. A moment, my lord. Cornelia, I shall not be home to dinner.
I see.
I'm going with Lord Bunsen. Goodbye, Barbara.
How does he know the Earl so well? How does he know Lady Isabel?
Archibald knows something of most people. He saw the Earl frequently when he was in London in the spring. And Lady Isabel once or twice. What a lovely face she has.
Barbara returned with Miss Carlyle to the attractions of the duck and giblet pie, but her manner was as absent as her heart, and that had run away to East Lynne. Mr. Carlyle sat down to the Earl's dinner table and gazed with pleasure at the display of silver, of glittering glass, of costly china. Very unnecessary and unjustifiable was the splendour under the Earl's financial circumstances, but it had its attractions. Exceedingly great were the attractions that day, all things combined. Take care of your senses, Mr. Carlyle.
We don't mind if we remain here and linger over our wine, Mr. Carlyle.
Not in the least.
It is little less than poison to me in my state of health. But I cannot forgo it.
What a soothing, gentle sound that is.
Isabel's singing carries a singular charm with it. I think that charm lies in her subdued,
quiet style. Are you fond of music?
I've been reproached by scientific performers with having neither ear nor taste for what they call good music, but I like that.
Before Lord Mount Severn had completed the fortnight of his proposed stay, the gout came back, seriously. It was impossible for him to move away from East Lynne. The gout came, and the gout went, but rendering him unable to leave his rooms. And this continued into the autumn. During all this time, his chief and constant visitor had been Mr. Carlyle.
It is so considerate and kind of you to come out here so often to cheer up my loneliness. Our evenings together have been a great solace to me. But I'm pleased to say that I may not have to trespass on your generosity much longer.
Oh, yes.
Wainwright detects a distinct improvement in my condition.
Well, that is certainly good news.
If all continues to go well, I should be ready to leave in a fortnight's time.
Forgive me for disturbing your conversation, Mr. Carlyle. But I have a favour to ask of Papa.
Huh?
Will you grant it, Papa?
You don't ask them often, child. What is it?
I want you to help poor Mr. Kane.
Mr. Kane?
The organist of St. Jude's. It was Mr. Carlyle who kindly recommended that he should tune my piano. He tells me that he is in desperate need. He gets only £30 a year from his salary as organist. He owes 2 years' rent and has 7 children to feed.
But what are you proposing, Isabel?
He's getting up a concert to raise money.
Poor Kane. I feared it would only add to his embarrassment.
Why do you say that?
Well, because, Lady Isabel, nothing gets patronized at West Lynne. Nothing native. And people have heard so long of poor Kane's necessities that they think little of them.
Well, I shall try and show West Lynne that I don't take a lesson from their book. Papa, I want you to take me to Mr. Kane's concert.
To listen to a bunch of rustics scraping their fiddles? My dear Isabel.
See, if you and I promise to be present, all the families round West Lynne will attend. And Kane will have the room full. Oh, just think, Papa. How would you like this furniture to be taken away from you?
Isabel, don't say such things.
And just having a full concert would stop it. Make a sacrifice for once, dearest Papa, and go, if it be only for an hour.
You gypsy. You're as bad as a professional beggar. Very well. We will look in for half an hour.
The concert was to take place on a Thursday, and on the following Saturday, Lord Mount Severn intended finally to quit East Lynne. Preparations were in progress, but when Thursday came, they were seen to be all in vain. The Earl had experienced a violent attack and could not move from his bed.
What do you think, Papa? Shall I do?
You mean to go to the concert alone, Isabel?
I cannot forsake Mr. Kane, Papa, not now. The carriage can take me to the concert room, and I can go in with the deuces.
Do you seriously intend to go to the concert dressed in lace and diamonds? You're out of your senses, Isabel.
I thought I would show these West Lynne people that I think the poor man's concert worth going to and worth dressing for.
You'll have the entire room staring.
Oh, I don't mind. Let them stare. I'll bring you word all about it.
You vain child. But Isabel... There. Go along now. Talking makes me worse.
Shall I stay at home with you?
Quite the contrary. I had rather you were away. You can do no earthly good, for I could not have you in the room. Goodbye, my dear. I hope the concert will not be too great an insult to your sensitive ears.
What is it? Beg pardon, sir. Could you happen to inform me whereabouts Lady Isabel is sitting?
Yes, at the other end of the room, near the orchestra.
I'm sure I don't know how ever I am to get over to her then. My lord has taken it alarmingly worse, sir.
What is it? He's dying.
There you go.
dreams are awful, sir. Mrs. Mason said we were to fetch my young lady home and not lose a moment. Wells is waiting outside with the carriage.
It will be easier for me to make my way through the room. I'll bring Lady Isabel.
I'm sure, sir, I should be under everlasting obligations.
You would.
Just a moment. Yes, sir. Excuse me, please.
Excuse me. May I have a drink, please?
Excuse me. I'm so sorry.
You would follow.
Isabel.
Mr. Carlyle. I thought you were not coming to speak to me tonight. Is it not a famous room?
It's more than famous, Lady Isabel, but Lord Mount Severn does not find himself so well. He has sent the carriage for you.
Pa, not so well.
At any rate, he wishes you to go home. He is indeed worse.
Very well. When the song is over, not to disturb the room.
No, I think you had better lose no time. Never mind the song. I don't know. Come this way. Excuse me, please. I'm so sorry.
Good evening, my lady.
Thank you, William. Is Papa much worse?
Oh, yes, my lady. He was screaming something shocking. But they think he'll live till morning.
Till morning? Oh, Mr. Carlyle, why did you not tell me?
Oh, dear Lady Isabel, I'm grieved that you are told now. But this may be only an ordinary attack. Step in. I trust we shall find it nothing more.
Are you going home with me?
Oh, certainly. I shall not leave you to go home alone.
Then get in at once.
Don't worry, Lady Isabel. I will ride outside.
The night is cold.
You need not worry on my account. Now, do not spare your horses, Wells. Lady Isabel will be sick with anxiety.
She'll be worse before morning, poor child. Get up there!
Is the Earl really in danger?
Aye, sir, that he is. I heard Mr. Wainwright say as he thought the gout was going on to the heart.
The Earl's former attacks have been very alarming.
Yes, sir, I know. But this bout is different. Besides, these bats didn't come for nothing.
Bats? What are you talking about?
Well, the bats have been round the house this evening, sir. Oh,
bats are fond of flying about at night time.
Ah, they don't come in shoals, sir, round about you, and in at the windows. Tonight, when we got back after leaving my young lady at the concert, they told me that Mrs. Mason wanted to see me in the library. She was all by herself, standing at the open window. I never saw such a sight in my life. The bats were flying about in scores, in hundreds. A cloud of them, diving down at the window. Oh, right inside they come, and would have touched our faces had we not drawn back. What does this mean, Wells? She says to me. I opened the window to look at them. Did you ever see them so thick? No, ma'am, nor so near, I said. And I don't like to see them, for it betokens no good. It's a sign. What is it a sign of, Wells? She says, jesting. I have heard, I says, that it's a sure sign that death is at the door of the house. 3 minutes later, there wasn't a single bat to be seen. They'd all gone into the sky. My lord was screaming in mortal agony.
Dr. Wainwright, why does his face look like that? It is pale. Grey. I've never seen anyone look so.
He has been in great pain, my lady, and pain leaves its traces on the countenance.
Mr. Carlyle, please do not leave the house. When he wakes up, meet Jean to see you here. I'd like to see you very much.
I will not leave the house, Lady Isabel.
My lady, it would be best if you were to leave him now.
Why should I?
You must leave your father with his medical attendants. They wish to be alone with him.
Is it really necessary that I should leave the room? Necessary for him, I mean.
It is necessary.
But you will bring me word how he is until I may go in again.
Indeed.
Nothing more could be done for Lord Mount Severn in this world. And the death scene was prolonged and terrible. Is it or is it not the case that a badly spent life entails one of these awful deathbeds?
It is cruel to keep me away from him. Pent up in here, this night has seemed as long as 10. When your father was dying, were you kept away from him?
A hardy, callous man may go where you may not.
Oh, you are not hardy and callous. You really have no right to keep me from my father.
Forgive me, my dear Lady Isabel. I cannot let you go.
He is my dear father. I have only him in the whole world.
I know. I know. I feel for you all that you are feeling. 20 times this night I have wished, forgive me the thought, that you were my sister, so that I might express my sympathy more freely and comfort you.
Tell me then, why am I kept away?
He is too ill for you to see him. His symptoms are too painful. Were you to go in, you would regret it all your afterlife.
Is he dying? I trust you not to deceive me.
I fear he is.
Going forever from me. Going forever. Oh, Mr. Carlyle, let me see him for a minute. Just one farewell. Will you not try for me?
I will go and see. Lady Isabel,
I can see him.
I wish I could comfort you.
Tell me the worst.
I have nothing to tell you but the worst. May God support you, dear Lady Isabel.
The grey dawn of morning was breaking over the world, advent of another bustling day in life's history. But the spirit of William Vane, Lord Mount Severn, had soared away from it forever.
That was the first part of East Lynne by Mrs. Henry Wood, adapted for radio in 7 parts by Michael Bateman. With Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Henry Wood, Moya Leslie as the Lady Isabel, David Collins as Mr. Carlyle, Anthony Everidge as Francis Levison, Maxine Audley as Miss Cornelia, and Julie Barry as Barbara Hare. Lord Mount Severn was played by Alan Dudley, Emma Vane by Margaret Ward, Mrs. Levison by Sheila Grant, Charles by Stephen Hattersley, Andrew by Andrew Branch, Mrs. Hare by Joan Matheson, Justice Hare by Brian Hewlett, Richard by Kim Wall, Dill by Tim Reynolds, and Wainwright by Paul Gregory. The pianist was Martin Goldstein. East Lynne was directed by David Johnston.